And welcome back. It's been 41 years since Richard Nixon declared the war on drugs. It's a war that has yet to be won. Billions have been spent in fighting it, not only in enforcing the law, but also in putting offenders in jails and prisons. There are some calls for new strategies. We'll be talking about that in this segment with Ethan Nadelman, founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. It advocates for drug policy alternatives. Ethan, so nice to have you with us. Thanks.
Well, it's good to be in St. Louis.
Now, we're talking about drug policy, but it's really policies that we're talking about, plural, isn't it?
Well, that's right, because if part of this is about how we deal with the remarkably high rates of incarceration in America, where we lock up far more people per capita than any other country in the world and certainly than any other real democracy. It's about how we figure out how to regulate marijuana, because this prohibitionist policy has failed. It's about how we treat addiction as a health issue and try to reduce overdose fatalities and diseases like hepatitis and HIV and how we try to help people who are struggling with addiction.
Well, what are some of the ideas you have for changing these things?
Well, I'd say the one that's most in people's minds right now is what's going on with marijuana. There's been a remarkable transition in public opinion about how to deal with marijuana in just the last 6 years. The Gallup poll just 6-7 years ago had 1/3 of Americans in favor of legally regulating marijuana like alcohol and about 2/3 against. Now the country's evenly split, and there are ballot initiatives that people will be voting on tomorrow in Washington, Colorado, and Oregon to legally regulate marijuana, to tax it, control it, regulate it, take it out of the hands of criminals. And I'll tell you something, Don, that initiative, especially in Washington State, it looks like it really could win. Colorado's got a shot. I don't think Oregon, but this will really be transformative. It will signal perhaps the beginning of the end of national marijuana prohibition, just like what happened with alcohol prohibition late 20s, early 30s, when the states began turning their backs on that.
But I know you've heard this many, many times. We've been hearing for years that the problem with marijuana is one of the problems, people would argue, is that it's a gateway drug and it leads to things that are much worse for you.
Well, I'll tell you this. I would describe the gateway theory of marijuana as more or less an ounce of truth embedded in a pound of bull, by which I mean it is certainly the case that most people use heroin or cocaine, started using marijuana before. They also started using alcohol before as well. But on the other hand, the vast majority of people who use marijuana do not go on to use heroin or cocaine. They don't even go on to become regular marijuana users or marijuana addicts. So trying to reduce heroin or cocaine addiction by stopping younger people from using marijuana is a little like trying to reduce motorcycle fatalities by discouraging bicycle riding. The other point, of course, is the Dutch example, whereas the Dutch, you know, have more or less semi-legalized the retail sale of marijuana. They separated the soft drug market from the hard drug market. And what they found is that the percentage of young people who use marijuana, it's not just much lower than it is in the United States. The percentage who go on to use harder drugs, the gateway, is lower than it is in the U.S. because what happens is drug dealers there don't sell all the drugs together. They've separated out. So the gateway has a lot more to do with all of this stuff being in the criminal market than it has to do with anything inherent about marijuana.
Well, you know, we're doing a program here tomorrow on the exploding use of heroin here and in other parts of the country. And I know there are people that are going to be saying the reason it's exploding, as particularly among the young, is because they started on marijuana.
Well, but remember, young people have been using marijuana for many decades. You know, consistently for the last 40 years, 80% of 17-year-olds say it's easy to get marijuana. And marijuana use rates have gone up and down over the years. But what's going on with heroin right now in this part of the country, I don't think it's connected to that at all. It's the fact that you have more distribution of this stuff. It's been growing. We don't really use Afghanistan heroin. We get our heroin mostly from Colombia and Mexico. But I think the real answer there, we can see the futility of the law enforcement efforts. And filling Missouri's prisons with ever more people is not the answer. We know that from 40 years of a failed drug war. The real answer there is trying to keep people from dying if they use heroin. So around the country now, you're seeing what are called Good Samaritan 911 laws, where people, if they witness a heroin overdose, can call police and not worry about getting arrested. There is an antidote called naloxone that some cities are making much more available, not just for emergency responders, but also for police and for family members of drug users. So let's focus on reducing the number of people getting hurt rather than locking up as many people as we can.
So would you treat people who use, abuse, and sell and distribute heroin the same way you would people who do the same thing with marijuana?
No, I would not. I think that what I do is I look at what – I look at outside the United States. It's something that Americans oftentimes do too little of. And I would look at the hard evidence on this stuff. And what you'll see is in a country like Portugal 11 years ago, they basically said anybody in possession of a small amount of any drug – marijuana, cocaine, heroin, whatever – we're not putting you in jail. We're not drug testing you. We are going to figure out why you're using these drugs, and we're going to help you. We're going to do our best to help you, and we're going to put our resources into the health system, not into the criminal justice system. So they didn't make the sellers legal. What they did in Switzerland and now in six or seven other countries is they said to the really serious heroin addicts, if you can't quit through a 12-step program, through jail, through a methadone maintenance, what have you, you can come to this clinic. You can get legal heroin, pharmaceutical from a pharmaceutical company there with other services, and we're going to try to help you get off this stuff. And in fact, the results are in. The countries that have allowed heroin addicts, the most serious committed heroin addicts, to get their heroin legally from a clinic found reductions in crime, death, disease, improvements in people's quality of life, and a net savings for taxpayers.
Well, the problem, as I see it, for you and people who are where you are on this issue is you've got to get it through the politicians. And, you know, I don't think a lot of politicians are going to run on a campaign such as what you're subscribing to.
Well,
here.
One reason, you know, my organization, we're the leading one in the country advocating for alternatives. One reason we have relied on the ballot initiative process, which exists in Missouri and about half the other states, is because this is an issue where the public's ahead of the politicians. So the whole issue of making marijuana legal for medical purposes, that first emerged in the western states back in the late 90s because people had said the war on drugs has gone too far. There are people who are really sick for whom marijuana is a benefit, so let's change that. The same thing with providing treatment instead of incarceration for people struggling with drug addiction. We passed those ballot initiatives in Arizona and California. So the ballot initiative process is an important one, and maybe it'll happen that way in Missouri as well.
Do you have any numbers as to how much money could be saved if we went this route as opposed to putting people away for long periods of time?
Figure it this way. The war on drugs is costing this country between $50 and $100 billion a year. You know, it's not just locking up people at a cost to $20,000 to $50,000 depending upon where they live or if they happen to be elderly costing hundreds of thousands. You know, the country is spending billions and billions of dollars locking up people over the age of 70 right now. So, I mean, we would save huge amounts of money. In the case of marijuana, we could earn tax revenue, right, which could amount to $10 billion a year or more nationally, maybe more than that. With the other drugs, people don't really see. There's not much support for legally regulating heroin or cocaine like alcohol or cigarettes. So there it's more about making controlled programs where addicts who cannot get clean can get it, you know, that way. But what a massive economic savings it would be.
And, of course, it would have a huge effect on law enforcement.
Well, you know, the reason we get more and more law enforcement saying, oftentimes publicly but more often privately, we're with you, we can't say so publicly, is because the police recognize the absurdity of this thing. What they know is that marijuana, I mean, look, many of them smoked it when they were younger, their friends smoke it. The whole notion of half the drug arrests in America are for marijuana. In Missouri, two-thirds of your drug arrests last year were for marijuana. So a lot of police say, that just doesn't make sense. With respect to the other stuff, they get it that addiction's a health issue. They get it that locking up more people, that makes sense. And they also understand that going after the drugs is like shooting fish in a barrel. And people are saying, well, wait a second. I want the police focusing on real crime, predatory crime, theft, domestic violence. I want the more sophisticated guys going after white-collar criminals who are ripping off the public good. I think the public wants resources properly allocated when it comes to law enforcement.
So what are you after? Is it legalization, decriminalization, and what is the difference anyway between the two?
Well, the way I'd really say it is what I'm really after is what I would call a civilized way of dealing with the reality of drugs in our society. I don't think anybody believes anymore we're ever going to attain a drug-free society. That rhetoric back from the 80s and 90s, people said, come on already. One way or another, whether we're talking about illegal drugs or alcohol or cigarettes or pharmaceuticals, they're here. They're not going away. We better figure out how to learn how to live with them so they cause the least possible harm and in some cases the best possible good. Now, what does that mean? Marijuana, it means let's responsibly regulate it, like we have with a tough alcohol or cigarette policy. With the other drugs, it means stop throwing people into jail or prison simply for using a drug if they're not behind the wheel of a car or hurting somebody else. Then it means focusing on reducing. I mean, you're in Missouri, you're putting away your average drug seller for 9 years, sometimes for longer periods of time than people who commit horribly violent crimes or low-level homicides or major thefts. It makes no sense in terms of resources. So I would say let's try to reduce the role of criminalization and the criminal justice system in drug control to the maximum extent possible while protecting public health and public safety. And we can go a lot more down that line in terms of dealing with this more sensibly without endangering the public.
Got to take a break. My guest in studio is Ethan Nadelman, founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. We're talking about the use of drugs today and how the war on drugs, if you will, and how it might better be fought, according to Mr. Nadelman. We'll be back to continue this conversation, and we'd like to bring you into it. We have some time left for some phone calls at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, or you can also reach us through Facebook. Back in just a moment, this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Ethan Nadelman, founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. Our question to you in the audience, do we need to reform our drug policy? Mr. Nadelman says we do, and that's what we are talking about. I have an email here from University City, Ethan, and it's from Sheila, who says, how much extra government income on the state and federal levels, that is, could be added from the legalization and taxation of marijuana? And what is the attitude of most police forces toward legalization? You've already answered that question. Mm-hmm. But again, numbers. Do you have any numbers that we can?
Well, some of the best estimates are being produced by an economist at Harvard named Jeff Myron, who's estimating, I believe, $10 to $20 billion in potential revenue from around the country if we tax and regulate this stuff. The whole key, right, is to set the tax at a level that's high enough to discourage overconsumption and to bring in revenue, but not so high that it sustains a substantial black market. A study came out of Mexico just a few days ago from a business organization, the Mexico Competitive Institute, and they anticipated that if these initiatives pass, it would probably take away a few billions of dollars from the Mexican criminal organizations. So you would have a clear benefit, like with the repeal of alcohol prohibition, and, of course, tremendous law enforcement savings.
And we have a call from St. Louis County. Sarah wants to join us, so let's bring her in. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi. First of all, I wanted to compliment your guest and say thank you for the work that you do. I'm a criminal defense attorney here in St. Louis, and people just that have never been in the criminal justice system have no idea what is going on and how bad it really is. Our prisons are so overcrowded, and these drug arrests are absolutely filling our prisons. And there has been an argument made by prosecuting attorneys that, well, if a kid has or a person has a small amount of marijuana, it's just, you know, misdemeanor, probation, an SIS, suspended imposition of sentence. Well, I'm here to tell people those convictions, they are considered convictions for the rest of your life for government agencies and law enforcement. So later in life, you want to be a lawyer, you want to be a teacher, how about a nurse? Join the Army. You have to disclose those things always. And actually, I know of a case of a grown man who tried to get a liquor license in Webster Groves for his business, and his misdemeanor marijuana conviction kept him from getting it in Missouri. So I just think people need to understand how much this affects people that are charged and end up pleading guilty. Anyway, thank you so much. I hope to God people listen to this and realize what we're doing is insane.
Well, I mean, Sarah's absolutely right. I mean, people think, oh, marijuana is practically legal or decriminalized. But when half the drug arrests in America last year, half of the 1.5 million arrests, and as I said, in Missouri, two-thirds of the drug arrests are for marijuana. And it is true. You get that thing on your record, you may not be able to. You know, there's a law in Missouri that if you've ever been convicted or pled guilty to a marijuana felony, which can include just growing a single plant, you are never allowed to get food stamps for the rest of your life. Now, mind you, if you've been convicted hit or rape or murder or grand larceny, you're still eligible, right? But it's also true. People go to jail or prison and they get trained for something, then they can't get a license to do it. You can't adopt a kid in some places. You can't vote in some places. It makes it harder to travel outside the country and all sorts of other things. But, you know, there's a bigger issue here, which is really that we're locking up people in this country at a rate that's 5 or 6 or 7 times that of almost any other civilized country. And we've kind of lost perspective. We somehow inherently think that the criminal justice system needs to be front and center in dealing with drugs. But that's not the case.
And most of those being arrested are poor and minorities.
That's right. Right. That's
Let's take another call as time begins to get away. Joe in O'Fallon, Missouri, you're up. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I just want to say, you know, the addiction theory to me is hogwash. I started smoking marijuana when I was around 10 or 11, and I quit when I was 22 when I found out I was going to have a son. I couldn't tell him not to do something I was doing. But I've never went back to it. I've never had the craving to go back to it. You know, it's not like alcohol. I come from a family of alcoholics. You know, once you're hooked to the beer and the alcohol, it's hard to get off of it. Cigarettes the same way. So the addiction to marijuana to me is hogwash. I don't believe it.
Well, let me just say, I mean, I think in some sense you're right. What I put this way is I would define addiction is when you're using a substance or engaged in activity where it lands up being harmful to you and others around you and you somehow are having a hard time stopping. And the fact of the matter is most people who use marijuana do not get dependent or addicted on it. Most people who use marijuana are responsible citizens. There's never been a marijuana overdose fatality. But the fact is that there are people who are using too much marijuana. There's, you know, young people who are waking and baking, you know, getting out of bed in the morning, smoking weed going to school, and that's not good. There are people who are smoking weed 24/7, and it's undermining their ability to do what they need to do, and they are having a hard time stopping. So, yes, you're right. It's not like alcohol addiction, not like heroin or cigarette or methamphetamine addiction, but marijuana is a drug, and there can be problems with it.
We don't have too much time left. We're doing work here locally with drug courts that seem to be having some success. Is this something that's catching on across the country?
Well, drug courts have caught on around the country, and they are very much a mixed blessing. I mean, to the extent that what they're doing is enabling judges to take people who have been arrested for crimes of theft or other sort of low-level crimes, enable them to get them into treatment and help them, they are a very, very good thing. And there are some drug court judges around the country, including, I think, a few in this city who are really doing the Lord's work on this. On the other hand, to the extent that drug courts become a way of just enlarging the imposition of the criminal justice system into drug treatment where it does not belong, then they're becoming a problem. And there are some places where drug courts land up increasing the number of people spending time behind bars. So I would say they can be good, but they should be focusing not on locking up people whose only offense is to possess a little bit of a drug. They should be focusing on more serious offenders.
This conversation is really just getting started, and I know people would want to have the opportunity to talk to you further about this. You're going to be around for a while, aren't you? And where will you be?
Well, I think there's going to be something just after I leave here, Don, over at the Gateway Golf Course. Mm-hmm. There's a gathering public from 12:32, sponsored by the Missouri Association of Social Workers. You can probably find it on their website. So if you can get over there, please, and we can continue the conversation over there.
And what sort of response have you been getting as you continue this campaign?
Well, what's happening is this is a long-term campaign. This is my life. And I'd say over time, more and more people are saying, I agree. The war on drugs has failed. It has no prospects of working. We have to take a few risks and try to pursue a different way.
Ethan Nadelman, thank you so much for being with us. Ethan is the founder and executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. And we're talking about reforming drug policy in this country and in this community. Thank you so much, Ethan.
Thank you, Don.
Hope you have a good turnout this afternoon.
Great.
A reminder, by the way, that you can find more information about the current election cycle at beyondnovember.org, a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Tomorrow on St. Louis On the Air, the polls will have been open for a couple of hours, so we'll take a quick look at how things are running, and then we'll change course and talk about the growing incidence of heroin addiction in our area. Archive version of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. This program is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.